Hey everyone, and welcome back to Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn movie blog, which can be found at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is your host Jasper, and Ghostface Miller brought over his flashlight, nightlight, and emergency candles, cause on this episode of Scorncast, we're going to illuminate the wackiness of the 1973 TV movie remake, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, in which architect Guy Pearce, girlfriend Katie Holmes, and young daughter Bailey Madison move into a spooky old mansion, and are promptly tormented by sinister creatures that live in the basement, as if the housing market wasn't treacherous enough already. So, Ghostface, how afraid of the dark were you after you saw Don't Be Afraid of the Dark?
It's weird. Like, I left the theater and I was just going to walk home. It's like 10-15 minute walk, but it was like 10 o'clock at night. I was like, I'm getting in a cab. I'm not walking home alone, you know, in the dark.
So, did you bill the little creatures for your cab fare?
Yeah.
Right. How would you do that exactly?
They were in the engine, yeah.
They had one of those, like, bike pedal things, like those creatures run that drill machine in Labyrinth.
Yeah, exactly. There's, like, 50 of them under there, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. How familiar are you with the TV movie that this is based on?
Not familiar at all.
So did this movie, like, work for you as something that was original and kind of novel?
I definitely knew that it was a remake, so I went into it knowing that. I knew that it was a remake of a TV movie, too, which I think adds a certain level of, like, how much are they adding with, like, CG and, like, legit direction or whatever. No, like, disrespect to anyone that works on TV movies. But this one was, like, from the 70s, right? It's from, like, 78 or something?
Yeah, I think it was early 70s.
Yeah. Oh, early? Oh, okay. I thought it was, like, late 70s. Yeah. It definitely, like, the concept seems like it could be that old. And there was, like, a certain nostalgic part of it that seemed like Amityville Horror, just in that same vein of, like, this, is it the house? Is it, like, the family? Is it, you know, whatever else? And, like, clearly it's, like, these little gremlin-type things. But then there was parts of it that probably were scary, like, 40 years ago. Because, like, right now it was, like, reminding me of Gremlins and, like, Small Soldiers. And, like, all those movies were, like, CGI creatures just, like, fuck with stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, they have, like, silly voices and they're each, like, a different character, you know, whatever. And, like, this movie didn't go down that road, but it did enough as far as, like, the movements and things that they did that would, like, recall those things for me.
So it was, like, Gremlins 2, the new batch?
Yeah, it was sort of like that, like, a little bit. I mean, it was definitely more Gremlins, the first one, than the new batch. But there was certain things that they did and, like, things that they said that I was just like, are they going to be, like, all smart alecky, you know, and just, like, saying dumb stuff? But they didn't do that. But, like, just the way that they would grab, you know, like, little tools and, like, drag them across the room and, like, all this stuff. I just, like, I wasn't that scared of them.
And also there was that one scene where they attack, like, the make-your-own sundae bar at Old Country Buffet. And they eat all the M&Ms, and you see one of them sitting there, like, next to the M&Ms, but he's got, like, the distended belly, and he's like, oh.
Yeah, that just, like, really pulled me out of the movie.
Yeah, that did not happen in this movie.
No, it did not. It did not.
Maybe it should have. I don't know. Yeah, the original TV movie is kind of weird to watch now. I definitely remember seeing it as a kid on one of the times that they repeated it, I guess, in the early 80s. And watching it now, I can see how it would have been really terrifying at the time, especially because the ending of it is pretty bleak for something that was made in the early 70s, made for TV even. Or maybe there was a lot of that happening and I wasn't around in the early 70s, so I don't know. But watching it now, it's sort of like comical because of, you know, they didn't have the special effects budget to do CGI creatures. And, well, also CGI did not exist at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
In the capacity that it exists now. But it's definitely a situation where you have, like, actors in suits playing these creatures. And you have a lot of, like, forced perspective sets so that, you know, the props are all gigantic. So when you put the actors around it, they look like they're tiny. Like the Incredible Shrinking Woman with Lily Tomlin is what it reminds me of. In that respect, it's kind of goofy looking because it never really looks like it's part of that stuff that they shot with Kim Darby, who plays the woman who's in distress throughout the course of the first movie. Those scenes never really match up. Like, you're always aware of when you're looking at the forced perspective set. And also, I think that the creatures don't move their mouths when they talk. You know, they have like the masks on, the actors do, that make them look like the creatures, but when they talk to each other, their mouth stays closed, I think. I would say that in terms of the CGI here, I actually liked these creatures. I liked the detail that Guillermo del Toro brought to them, and I'm guessing that, you know, this is a Guillermo del Toro production. It's not his movie. He co-wrote it and produced it, and I think that's why there's a lot of problems that happen in this movie, stemming from the fact that he wasn't involved more with it. But for the most part, there were these little moments that were very Guillermo del Toro-y that I liked, particularly one where Bailey Madison, who is the child heroine of this movie, is fighting one of the creatures for a Polaroid picture that she took under a dinner table, which just struck me as like, that's Guillermo del Toro right there.
Is there a kid in the original?
No. In the original, the lead character is Kim Darby, who's an adult woman. I think that, you know, making the protagonist a little girl is a really good revision because it's more applicable to that like sinister fairy tale world that del Toro usually relies on as like a story blueprint.
Yeah.
And it makes also more sense that a child would be slower to react initially than Kim Darby does in the original as an adult woman. In the original, I think Kim Darby is someone who writes off all the creepy things going on in the house around her as byproducts of like nervous tension, which would not work at all for like today. Like, people would be like, no. But I think making the protagonist a child also causes problems because you have a child in danger and nobody's taking this child seriously after the point where it's like not even believable. What I was going to say about Guillermo del Toro was the creatures in this movie eat teeth, which I thought was really funny because there are these little monsters in Hellboy 2 called tooth fairies that also eat teeth. And the eating teeth thing is not a part of the original. This is something that was concocted specifically for the remake. And then there are a couple near shock moments involving keyholes that remind me of The Devil's Backbone, in which there's a really good scare moment involving a keyhole. And there's a scene at the end of this movie where Katie Holmes is incapacitated and she is on the floor sort of struggling to stay conscious, and she keeps closing her eyes and she keeps trying to fight to keep them open. And every time you see from her perspective that she closes her eyes and opens them, these creatures are closer and closer. And that reminded me of a scene in The Orphanage, which was a Guillermo del Toro production where a woman is playing hide and seek with ghosts, which totally makes sense within the context of the scene. But like every time she like closes her eyes or whatever and opens them back up, the ghosts are closer and closer and closer.
Yeah. Although technically she's playing red light, green light, but I understand what you're saying.
Yes, that's true. I never played red light, green light as a child.
No way, really?
Oh, no. That's like the best. We just had hide and seek and TV tag.
Right, TV tag was the best. The ultimate.
Yeah. We should have a TV tag league. Extreme TV tag.
Right, exactly. You should have played TV tag with Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Wait, how would I play TV tag with Don't Be Afraid of the Dark?
Well, I mean, just when someone went to tag you, you could say that.
It was a TV movie.
It's a TV movie.
Did they allow TV movies in TV tag?
Sometimes. You could squeeze it in, you know?
Did you ever, like, touch the ground and were you like, the blue and the gray?
Yeah.
Roots.
Roots, yeah, exactly. I don't know if the CG really helped it. I mean, in my opinion, like, it's almost better sometimes when, like, you don't see those things, or if it is gonna be fake, it's, like, really fake in a way that seems just tangible. Not necessarily, like, real-looking, but more like that's a real person in a suit that they're making look like they're really small. But it seems like there was just certain parts of them, like, all around on a person. Like, I mean, they totally, like, mess that one, like, groundskeeper man up or whatever. And they do it in, like, 6 seconds. And then there's, like, other scenes when they're, like, hanging all over other people. And they're kind of beating them up. But they're kind of also not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I was just like, this is when CG doesn't work. Because there's, like, so many of them on one person. And the person's, like, not getting hurt. And it's, like, not... I just feel like they're not even really reacting to like all these little pieces of action all around them.
two things I would say. One, that the creatures are probably seen a little bit too much for my comfort in this movie.
Maybe that's what it was.
Not that I was ever scared by them, necessarily.
No, yeah, that's the thing, though. I felt like I wasn't scared of them because I saw them so much.
Yeah, this isn't a Jaws situation where you get a little bit at a time and then they save it all for the climax. These things are probably revealed maybe halfway through the movie and then frequently thereafter.
Maybe even earlier than that. And there's parts when they're out and like they're supposed to be scared of light, and I was like, why aren't they like running away? Like, it's bright as shit in this room. That was like when I was kind of like, all right, it's cool that they're showing them to us and like we don't have to wait and it's not all M. Night Shyamalan or whatever. But at the same time, it was kind of like, sometimes less is more, like, you know?
Yeah, and that's the second point I would make, is that I don't know if it's the fault of the CGI in this movie. It seems to me to be more of a fault of inconsistencies, like, with the story, because this movie is all over the place.
Yeah.
The director here is Troy Nixie. He's primarily a comic book artist. He's worked under Neil Gaiman, Batman, and Matrix titles. He directed a short film called Latchkey's Lament, and that's what brought him to Guillermo del Toro's attention, and that's how he got the directing job. And then the co-writer here is Matthew Robbins. He wrote this screenplay with Guillermo del Toro. And Matthew Robbins is most famous for co-writing Steven Spielberg's movie Sugarland Express, which is sort of known as his first movie if you don't count the TV movie that he did called Duel, which you could also use for TV tag. And for writing and directing the 80s sword and sorcery flick Dragon Slayer, and your favorite movie, the really bonkers tiny flying saucers comedy Batteries Not Included. So I'm going to put the blame on them because I'm such a Del Toro fanboy, and I'm going to say that this like really weird off-kilter inconsistency stuff is stuff that they brought to the table. Do you have anything you want to bring up first before I launch into my list?
No, you go ahead, and I'll chime in.
Okay, let's talk about this opening scene. This opening scene is a prologue to the movie that takes place, would you say, a century ago?
Yeah, it seemed like it was, like, even more than that.
There was a horse-drawn carriage, I think.
Yeah,
so,
and, like, candlelight and shit.
Yeah, and apparently a guy named Lord Blackwood used to own this house. It's Blackwood Manor. Basically, he dupes his maid into coming down into the basement where these creatures live inside a vent. The creatures have kidnapped his son and tell him that they will return his son safely to him if he gives them teeth, because they like to eat teeth.
Yeah, but it had to be children's teeth or something.
Yeah, that was his mistake.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah. He misheard them.
Yeah, he offers them the maid's teeth. He pulls out some of his own. They're not that thrilled, and they yank him down into the grate, and presumably he becomes one of them, because that's what happens, which is something that does happen in the original also. Like, their victims become one of them, which is a process that I would kind of like to see on film, right?
Yeah, that was intriguing. Yeah, because you could hear his son. That was, like, one of the things. Or they could emulate his son's voice or whatever.
And later on in the movie, when this backstory comes into play, because nobody believes Bailey Madison, who's the daughter of this guy who moves into the house. He's an architect, and he's trying to get a cover story in huge, creepy fucking mansion quarterly.
Yeah. Exactly.
And his...
I was like, why isn't this like a Flip My House reality show guy instead of whatever the hell he was supposed to be?
That would be the very special Halloween episode.
Yeah,
of Flip
exactly.
This House. And he's played by Guy Pearce, and his fiance is Katie Holmes, who is an interior designer. And they move in there to flip it, I guess, for the cover of this magazine. And Bailey Madison is his daughter, who starts hearing these voices and coming from the vent. And the more that they terrify her, the more she starts to communicate her terror to the parent figures that do not want to hear any part of it. They just ignore her. Although Katie Holmes eventually comes around, and there's just a very strange sequence where Katie Holmes is investigating this business, and she winds up at the library in the special collections department. And a librarian there, who, you know, just happens to know all about Lord Blackwood, fills her in on this story. And
wait, can I just say, she's like, oh, I'm interested in reading everything about Blackwood. And he's like, Blackwood. Oh, yeah, you mean Aisle J, Row 32, Section 9.B9. He, like, says everything, and he takes her right to it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, we can even jump back in time a little bit and say that there's a caretaker on the grounds who you brought up already who knows what's going on here and knows that these creatures exist. And they attack him, and they put him in the hospital because he's near death or something. But they mess him up sort of badly. When he's in the hospital, Katie Holmes goes to see him, and she asks him if there's anything in the house that she should know about, and he says, lot 1134, instead of being like, there are fucking creatures in there, get out.
Yeah.
So that's why she has to go to Special Collections. Yeah.
Lot 1134. First of all, that character was kind of absurd, because, like, he was, like, the groundskeeper, but he was, like, all elbows, like, he or all thumbs or whatever, like, he had no business, like, fixing anything. He couldn't even, like, put those screws back in the hole.
Yeah, and the scene where they attack him is sort of ridiculous, because these monsters, or these little goblins, or whatever you want to call them, are so inconsistently abled throughout the movie. Like, they attack him with scissors and stuff, and it doesn't kill him, he just has a bunch of little stab wounds all over his body, but at the same time, they're, like, strong enough to drag a little kid down the stairs with a rope, or pull a grown woman, you know, into their little flu or whatever. But she goes to the library on his recommendation, and she bumps into this librarian who does exactly what you said. And the story that the librarian tells her is that Lord Blackwood's son disappeared, and a few days later, Lord Blackwood disappeared himself. Now, this time frame is puzzling for several reasons, one of which is that Lord Blackwood had a very productive several days between his son disappearing and him disappearing himself, because he managed not only to do a bunch of writing and illustrating about all these goblins, but he also did this gigantic mural inside the house of his son being captured by these goblins, which, why would you want that in your house?
I didn't quite get that. Maybe he had, like, a few sleepless nights, and that was how he, you know, is art therapy, I guess. I don't know. That was more like traditional, you know, cinematic reveal kind of thing. Like, it didn't seem like it was any real part of anything. And it was kind of like spoiled in the commercial too. So I was kind of like, when is she going to pull that blanket down?
Yeah.
and we will see that crazy work of art, you know? So, and then the way that she got about it, like, she went about it, you know, the library, and, like, this guy who knows everything about everything, like, he's, like, literally, like, a Blackwood historian.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just uber convenient.
We mentioned already about how these little creatures are light phobic, which is all over the place. There's an early scene where they come to Bailey Madison in her bedroom, and they're talking to her and trying to sort of sway her to be their friend and to turn against her parents. You know, getting back to what we were saying about how it's cool that they made the protagonist of this movie a child, which fits into the Del Toro template and also, you know, is probably better for this kind of movie rather than an adult. How did that sit with you? Because just for me, it became a question of, I feel like even if she bought them at first as, like, friendlies, that eventually they would really start to creep her out. I feel like if that was me at 9 or 10 or however old she's supposed to be, I would have been, like, shitting myself from the beginning.
Yeah, it was a little strange how quickly she took to them. And, like, I get it. She was supposed to be lonely, and she was supposed to kind of hate it there. And it was kind of like that was their shtick, was that they, like, lured these kids in somehow by being like, we're your friends, you know? Well, and can I just say also, like, their voices were creepy and everything, but they were also, like, I couldn't even understand what they were saying half the time. Like, there were so many whispers happening at the same time that I was like, maybe she's not scared because she doesn't know what they're saying.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, there were so many, this person whispering and that person. Like, I felt like there was sort of a leader, and he had, like, grayish hair on his head or whatever.
I took it that was supposed to be Lord Blackwood.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, that makes sense. Okay, so they literally become one of those things.
Yes.
Oh, okay, sorry, I did not get that. But that makes sense, because just, like, he sort of was in the lead, like, it's sort of, you know, he was sort of leading.
Which also makes sense, because, and it sort of doesn't make sense at all, both of them at the same time, because in the end of the movie, spoiler alert, like, I need to issue it on the Scorncast, but when Katie Holmes is yanked down into the bottom of the basement and becomes one of them ostensibly, she's sort of like the new boss for no real reason. She's the one, like, dictating them that we will wait, which doesn't really, how does that hierarchy work there? Like,
yeah, I don't get it. It's like, you're the new, like, we just captured you, and now you're our ruler. It's like, there must be some, like, weird group think, I don't know, for some reason, because they're human and they still have, like, that part of them that they can, like, outsmart or just not think so instinctually, like, teeth and bones. I don't get it. Yeah. Doesn't make sense. And, like humans are more patient than those little gremlins. Well, yeah, no, I mean, I would have definitely been really fucking freaked out about those things. Like, even before seeing them or not seeing them, just hearing voices. And she didn't even, it would have been one thing if she immediately ran to tell her, you know, her dad and this woman, like, I'm hearing weird voices and I'm scared, like, what's going on? I don't like this place. But she just started talking back to the voices.
Yeah.
Like, they were creepily using her doll as, like, a puppetry thing, and she, like, liked that. And then the doll, like, totally freaked her out after that. The teddy bear, excuse me. But it was just, like, I don't know. I didn't believe that part of it. I believed that she was lonely and that she was smart enough. But then there was parts of it also, and maybe it was just because it was Guillermo del Toro, that was kind of like, is this real? Or is she just kind of imagining this because she's lonely? There was that part that really reminded me of Pan's Labyrinth about it.
That's a film that's much more even than this one, though. I don't think that you're ever in doubt that this is actually happening to this girl.
I guess it's not that I was in doubt. It's that just how hard they made it for her to prove it to anybody else.
Yeah.
Even though there was, like, the coin underneath her pillow, and, like, there was all these tells that she found a tooth, the denial that her dad held made me almost think that he was in on it for a second, which was weird, or that, like, it wasn't all that real to them. Like, there was almost, like, they couldn't see them because it was, like, this weird child, you know, like, almost like a Polar Express Gremlins. Like, only she could hear them, only she could see them, you know, or something. And I didn't want the movie to over-explain it and to, like, dumb it down in that way, but at the same time, some explanation of something might have helped.
Yeah, especially when you're all over the map. Like we were saying, these things, they come to her in her bedroom at night, and she has to turn off this little tiny rotating lantern, like one of those creepy things you always see in, like, children's rooms and, like, old horror movies. Like, I'm thinking of Sleepy Hollow, particularly.
Yeah.
She has to turn off that so that they can be in the room with her. But yet, at the end of the movie, they sort of, like, attack a dinner party that her parents are having, where there's light all over the place.
Yeah, I didn't get that. And there was times when they were, like, expert climbers, and they could, like, climb up something and, like, rip a cord, and, like, an anvil or, like, a piano would fall down. Like, there was things that, like, were almost, like, comical. And, I mean, comic as in, like, a cartoon. And then there was other times when they were, like, not pitiful, but they just, like, weren't as badass. Like, why didn't they kill her in the room, in the library? You know, like, they had her alone, and they, like, just kind of, like, teased her.
Yeah. And yet she kills one of them after taking a picture. You never see what's on that picture, correct?
And that's the thing. You never see what's on that picture, and you never see anyone reference that arm. Like, she pushes the bookcase and it slides on its little, like, wheel thing and hits the gremlin so that, like, he gets squashed and his arm, like, falls off. And I was like, dude, grab that arm and show it to people and be like, they're real.
Yeah.
And, like, they never even address it. I was like, there's a million people standing around in that room. They're all looking around at every little detail, and no one sees, like, just a dangling gremlin arm.
Guy Pearce picks up the Polaroid picture and looks at it, and I was waiting for the moment where, and I thought they were saving this for, like, the final shot of the film.
Right.
Where you would see what was on the Polaroid, and it was a creature. But it's weirdly, like, never shown what was on the Polaroid.
Yeah. And it was almost like he didn't see anything. Like, she took it. It was so blurry that you couldn't even make anything out, you know. But she had also taken, like, 20 pictures, that whole room sequence. She took, like, so many pictures.
Yeah, they're not going to be winning any Parent of the Year awards.
No, definitely not. Yeah.
Because even when they decide to get her out of there at that point in the movie, they drug her first.
Right, yeah.
And they put her in her bedroom.
Right, go to sleep. Just go to sleep.
But they put her in her bedroom while he goes to, like, start the car or whatever. And yeah. I'm like, why don't you put her in the car?
It was at that point when I started to think that maybe he was evil. There was a specific scene where Kim is in the basement. And maybe it was, like, he knew about this whole thing and he just wanted to be an Architectural Digest. And, like, he had to, like, give his kid or something in order to, like, do it. You know, I just started thinking of, like, how dumb can this go and what direction will this be? And there was a point where he was in the basement and she came down, or he came down to get her. And, you know, they kind of talked for a second or something. And then his eyes looked very black and he was, like, hugging her. And he was like, I'm going to go start the car. And, like, it was just kind of like, why didn't you do that already? Like, why are you hemming and hawing about this? Like, just do it. Like, your daughter is asleep upstairs in this evil, evil house with these, like, little creatures.
Yeah. And to a certain point, you know, you sort of have to see this movie from the side of the parents. Like, to a certain point. Because realistically, if a kid came to you, if you had a kid and you moved into a new house and the kid was like, you know, there are monsters here, I'm scared, you'd be like, no, there aren't.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, this movie really tips the scale there.
Yeah, there's so many things that happen that I'm just like, come on, this is so stupid.
Did you like the housekeeper who worked there? Her function was basically just to always be in the driveway when one of the adults came home, and just so she could be like, oh, thank God you're back.
Yeah. Oh, you're here. It's like, well, where's the daughter? And she's like, oh, I think she's in her room or the bath or something.
And I feel like in the scene where they attack the little girl when she's in the bath, this has already been established that light can make these things scurry away. So I just found it weird that she wouldn't
run over and turn on the fucking light.
Yes, basically. Yeah.
I mean, it was weird because, like, they spent so much time showing us how these things were smart and, like, clever, you know? Like, they're inside the medicine cabinet and, like, this weird little pokey device comes out and, like, turns the light switch off. Mm-hmm. But it was like, why didn't they, like, unscrew the light after that or break it, you know, earlier on to, like, set the scene in that mood and know that she's backed into a corner?
Yeah.
And instead, like, she gets out of the tub to then only kind of get back in the tub. And, like, I don't know. I mean, no offense to, like, that character because she's a little girl. But, like, those creatures, they just really, they were, like, disappointing as, like, they set them up as so awesome. And then they progressively got, like, lamer as the film went on.
Yeah, I did kind of like the idea, though, that instead of getting her right away, which they clearly had the capacity to do when she first makes contact with them, talking to them through the grate, they decide to get to know her a little first.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Which I just thought was such a strange detail. Like, we're going to eat you and take your teeth, but, you know, we'll play with you for a while.
Yeah, we'll take you out to dinner.
And the ends of these movies are always baffling to me because I wonder what the characters involved tell the police. Like, when the handyman is attacked, you hear the police talking amongst themselves, I think, and they describe it as, you know, there's been an accident. Which, what, how? Like,
yeah.
How do you get a bunch of little tiny stab wounds all over yourself?
All like, over yourself. And a giant, like, scissor.
Pair of
like
scissors sticking out of your
one
back.
One half of a scissor. Yes. popping out of your shoulder blade, your collarbone, where your shoulder meets, is crazy. And he's like, oh, I fell. You know, it's like, but maybe they knew him and they were like, well, that guy's all thumbs anyway.
All elbows, right, you said?
Yeah, he's all elbows.
And, like, in the end when Katie Holmes is, you know, assimilated into the monster culture and they lose her, her legs are broken and she's yanked down into the basement below while Bailey Madison and Guy Pearce watch. Like, what exactly did they tell the police?
Yeah, I don't know. They were like, she went on vacation. Or is that, you know, like... She fell in that tiny hole.
I don't understand. It reminded me a lot of the movie Gothica, where Halle Berry is a therapist in a mental facility who basically in the end of the movie you find out that a ghost inhabited her body and made her kill a few people who were horrible people. Like, they had it coming or whatever. But, like, how was that explained in court?
Yeah. Here's one thing that I thought this movie was going to do better, and it did just okay. In that, like, I thought it was going to be more Hitchcockian and, like, sort of just be about this family and, like, them coming together and, like, her embracing this woman as, like, you know, her mom and this woman being, like, stepping up to the plate and being more of a mom. And, like, they did kind of do that. They kind of went down that road. But it always just seemed like, well, there's nobody else here, so Kim, help! You know? Like,
yeah.
It didn't seem like they really connected on any real level. You know, like, they spoke about koi fish for, like, a second.
Oh, God, that scene was so horribly written. I know this scene, Guillermo del Toro had nothing to do with it. Because right? It's, like, this strange koi metaphor where she's explaining, you know, you have to be tough like the koi fish in this pond.
Right, but beautiful, tough. It's like, what makes them beautiful also makes them vulnerable. It's like, okay, I'm so confused.
Yeah.
There was things like that I was just like, is this for real? Like, I'm not sure on what level of, like, B-movie or B-horror movie were they going for? They took dips, and they almost seemed like they were on purpose. And then there was other times when it seemed like they were trying to elevate it to something else. So there was, like, I was just disappointed in that. I thought there was going to be more of that. And then, especially with the ending, it seemed like, you know, she definitely was the mother character that she always needed or wanted or whatever, but, like, you know, to what end?
Yeah, this one was pretty high on my list of anticipated movies for the summer, and I it was one of those cases where I think I gave it up pretty quickly because the first scene of the movie I thought was fine, the prologue thing with the Lord Blackwood, but then immediately, like, during the opening titles of the movie... When you have these words swirling around list the cast and credits, and it tells you everything. It says,
everything.
They take children, they eat teeth. It's spelled out literally on the screen of the movie, like, everything that is going to happen. And that's the point where I was like, all right.
Yeah, and it's funny, because that was actually a pretty slick, you know, credit sequence. Like, I didn't mind the art direction or the direction behind it, but I was just like, are they really, like, going this literal? Like,
yeah.
Like, it looked really nice, but I was like,
it did look nice.
I almost shouldn't be paying attention to the words.
Yeah.
And I should just be, like, watching things fly by, you know, whatever, because they really did give everything away.
Yeah.
And I guess they thought maybe they didn't explain all that stuff well enough before. You know, like, when they had the final cut of the movie, they were like, we should probably explain some of this bone-eating stuff. And it was like, really? Like, the prologue and the rest of the movie are about it. I don't think you need to have the title sequence like that.
Yeah, I would say that's probably one area where the director, being a comic book artist who's never, you know, done a major film release before, probably worked in his favor. I'm not trying to take a big poop on him or anything, but I would say that, you know, in case my grade for this movie seems a little bit higher than what it should be, considering how much we scorned it, even though this is the Scorn cast, Bailey Madison is pretty amazing in this movie.
Yeah, she's great. I mean, it's good that, like, the movie really revolved around her, because yeah. I think I didn't hate it. I probably didn't hate it as much as you, because I never saw the original, and you know, I was excited to see it, but I think I kind of knew how it was going to be. But she really, like, she sold it. You know, she sold a big part of this movie. She was awesome.
So if you were going to give a grade to Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, what grade would you give it?
I'd probably give it a C+.
I am in agreement with you once again.
It's not that scary.
And that's going to wrap up another episode of Scorncast. Thanks to Ghostface Miller for stopping by. Thanks to Bug for our theme music. Thanks to you for listening. And as always, you can visit PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com, comment on our posts, or give them a +1 if you have no comments to make. And you can email PopScorn at scornpop@gmail.com. The Thorn Birds, A Very Brady Christmas, Mother May I Sleep with Danger,